creature with no legs couldn't jump over it. Dismantle 3 sections of the fence at once, purposely leaving 7 to 10 step-wide gaps. Remove the stakes from these passages, using them to reinforce the other parts. The savage orcs were bewildered by the order, not understanding the reason for my decision. I had to chew the idea over for them, explaining my plan in detail. There aren't enough of us to reliably hold the whole perimeter, so we should concentrate in smaller sections. Keep in mind that there are only stupid, brainless undead and wild creatures against us, which will certainly run down the most obvious path precisely to the gaps I left. That is exactly where we'll meet them. I jumped down and walked along the barrier, choosing a place. Make the central passage here. I'll be posted here with the Grey Pack, and I swear by my ears that no one will get past me. The main passage will be defended by the Ogre and Naiad, and I'll place 30 orc warriors with wide shields and long spears with them. The spearmen's mission is to hold the enemy back while our bolts mow them down. I'm sure that 50 crossbowmen will be more than enough. To the left, then, will be the very strongest orcs from my guard, led by Ziabash Hardy. 50 soldiers with yatagans will stand at reserve behind the defensive bulwark and help with defense wherever needed. That division will be headed by our mountain troll. Where is he, by the way?
Right here, Captain Amra,
said the muscular, level 65 troll, overgrown with reddish fur, his hands dragging on the ground as he pushed his way through the dense crowd of orcish soldiers. I could now read his name, Vash. Before, his opinion of me was too low, and I could only see him as troll enforcer. Vash, you have earned my confidence with your bravery and strength. You are the one I'll entrust to command the reserve division. You and your 50 fearsome orcs will have to stop the enemy if they get through our defense at any point. If you do well enough tonight, you'll get a whole 100 to command. Vash thumped on his chest with a huge fist and roared out so loud that my goblin herbalist even got the deafened effect for a few seconds. Overall, my confident speech had a very positive effect on my subjects, and I heard shouts glorifying the captain's name from all directions. The orcs were clearly inspired. Foreman skill increased to level 34. Foreman skill increased to level 35. I called them all to silence and continued. While we still have the time, everyone keep building and at the same time reinforce our defenses by digging out a ditch in front of our fortification. This is a swamp, and the ditch will quickly fill with water, so the monsters will have no way to get to us except through the 3 passageways we leave open. Foreman skill increased to level 36. My skill grew again, and just in time. It was getting easier and easier for me to command the wild horde, giving orders to my subjects and setting them to work, which then leveled my foreman skill even more and increased my influence on the orcs. I waited for their enthusiastic cries to die down and continued. Proud warriors! Now all of you will receive good armor and weapons so you can really make a name for yourself in the upcoming battle. Once you get your weapons, Ziabash Hardy will assign you to a division. Whoever doesn't end up defending the 3 passageways will line up along the defensive bulwark and defend their section. But if there aren't any enemies near you, don't just stand around and pick your noses. Take up crossbows and shoot enemies over the barricade. Valeriana Quickfoot, you're in charge of the ranged soldiers. You are all to obey the Mavka, same as me. Now, in a normal voice, not shouting at full throat, I turned to my sister. Valeriana, you're our main damager and strike force. You're experienced in battle, so you decide where best to position yourself to do as much damage with your magic as possible. Don't be stingy with the mana. The enemies are high level, so you'll get good experience for killing them, and with every new level, your mana will be totally restored. But at any rate, I have more than enough mana potions. I bought plenty in Dotur Kawe, so take as many as you need.
And what should I do? The human healer asked, overhearing our conversation.
What a strange question, I exclaimed in surprise. You stand behind the soldiers and heal the wounded. Only spend your mana on healing, paying no mind to the enemies. Basically, the upcoming battle is a test of your professional abilities. If you prove yourself to be a skilled healer, you can come with us right to the upper reaches of the Styx.
But if you act dumb and don't manage to heal the wounded, I'll personally send you to respawn, I promise. By the way, healer, I don't see any pets with you. I'd never in my life believe that such a high-level mage doesn't have any. Where are they?
Antonius Just paused for some reason, as if deciding whether he should obey a player just one-third his level. But then he chuckled awkwardly, and three bright flying pixies showed up next to him. The miniature girls had variously colored sectile butterfly wings behind their backs. Every pixie was the size of my pointer finger, and all three of the winged beings were totally naked without the slightest hint of clothing. The naiad trader shook his head in reproach and brought his nephew down a peg with the words,
"You're a damn shame. You need to meet a normal girl, not spend day after day doing nonsense in this game."
And my sister walked up closer and commented on the healer's unusual winged pets.
"I saw pixies like that in the corporation's online store. Pixies restore mana for their master, which is very useful to any mage, and they also cast strong spells on enemies, but they cost 50 credits each, and I seem to remember them being dressed in different colored skirts made of flower petals."
"Yes, the pixies really are from the store, and were initially clothed," our new acquaintance agreed easily. "But I had a good reason to change their appearance. They're much cooler this way. And the pixies don't only charge mana. They make my magic reserves a whole 60% higher. They're very useful companions for a mage. And they are nice to look at."
Knowing my sister well, I could see that Valeriana was distinctly disapproving of such a vulgar choice, and also didn't have a friendly opinion of our healer overall, although the Mavka didn't confirm that aloud. However, Valeriana voiced a different thought completely, which needed to be considered before the upcoming battle.
"Amra, I'm surprised so many totally different monsters aren't fighting amongst themselves. That is very strange, because it really shouldn't be. Wolves are made to hunt rats, and undead to attack the living. But for some reason that isn't happening. It seems to me that if we can understand the reason for our enemies working together, we'll immediately realize how to fight them."
Taking advantage of the fact that the other players were busy, the Mavka took me aside and asked, barely audibly,
"I can see that you don't want to say anything in front of the others, but you can be open with me. What's wrong with our healer? You were looking at him like you wanted to strangle him with your bare hands."
I didn't think my private thoughts were so obvious. I hoped very much that the other players hadn't noticed. My sister understood me much better than the others, though. I had no secrets from Valeria, so I explained the reason for my doubts.
"Antonius Just is on my blacklist. He was one of the players who attacked the goblin village of Tish, and even took direct part in the murder of Taisha's sisters. I gave Taisha a promise before the gods of Boundless Realm to kill this man. But he found us. And now I have quite a dilemma. Ignore an oath I swore before the gods of Boundless Realm with all the resulting negative consequences like severe debuffs and streaks of bad luck, or lose an experienced high-level healer, which would be very undesirable before the upcoming heavy battle."
"Is that it? I thought it was something serious," my sister chuckled, showing her sharp, predatory teeth.
"To appease the gods of Boundless Realm, you just need to make sure Antonius Just doesn't survive this battle. Just make it all look like a coincidence, so the healer and his relative Max Sochnier don't suspect us."
"Us?" I asked, and the forest nymph bared her teeth yet again.
"Of course. You're my brother, after all, and you can always count on me for help. As for Antonius Just, don't lose your head. I'll deal with this problem myself, and promise that the gods will be left satisfied. And I'll do it with great satisfaction. I don't feel any sympathy for that healer, much less trust. That dude appeared at just too convenient a time, given you were searching for him in this huge world. Such things simply do not happen. Maybe you called him by name in one of your video clips?
No, of course not. But from what I did upload, my audience does know that I promised Taisha to find and punish those at fault in her sister's murders, although I, naturally, didn't say their names."
The forest nymph made an anguished grimace, showing a strong doubt in my mental capacity and, at the same time, marveling at how I could possibly not understand such elementary things.
"Tim, your big-eared goblin always had intelligence as the weakest stat, but you could understand yourself that all the top clans have already put two and two together and figured out exactly which players you promised Tai should attract down for the torching of Tish.
The Mavka turned around and looked carefully from side to side to make sure that we were still talking alone.
By the way, as the topic is turned to your beautiful green-skinned thief, would you mind telling me where she is? I was embarrassed to ask with everyone else around.
With no reservations, I told Valeria the situation with Taisha, about the unique quest, our duel, and my secret mission for the NPC thief. My sister stayed silent for a long time, then spoke out barely audibly, looking me right in the eyes.
Well, Tim, I hope you understand you will be spoiling your relationship with the strongest clan in Boundless Realm once and for all. After all, if Taisha does manage to steal the unique item from the Legion of Steel's treasure room, they'll never forgive you. Also, even if the theft is unsuccessful, the leaders of the Legion of Steel will be frightfully angry at such impudence.
I already understood perfectly, but didn't see any other way to get the item, and at the same time expressed to the Legion of Steel how upset I was with their attempt to steal my unique NPC companion. Valeria gave a heavy sigh, shook her head, then changed the topic once again.
Doesn't it occur to you, Tim, that we might be going about this all wrong? We're trying to reach the upper Styx by force, repeating the error of the previous 26 expeditions. But all their pitiful experience shows that no matter how strong the initial expedition members, sooner or later they came across an equal force and had to stop. Some players made it further than others, sure, but eventually they ran into monsters they just couldn't handle.
And what do you suggest?
I asked, my interest piqued. The forest nymph shrugged her shoulders unconfidently.
I'm not sure. I have only one suggestion for now. In essence, after all, our army is made of NPC orcs and is moving through territory controlled by other NPCs. As a rule, different groups of NPCs are rarely hostile to one another, especially if there are no living players nearby. It's logical, otherwise all the computing resources of the Boundless Realm servers would be wasted calculating which NPC predator saw which NPC prey, managed to sneak up to it, or take it down. The world comes to life only when there is a living player nearby to witness it. It is, after all, for our benefit that all this beauty is made. Approximately the same thing happens with intelligent NPC races, clans, and armies.
I caught my sister's idea and, after some thought, agreed with her.
That's true. That goblin village of Tish, for example, stood for years unnoticed until me and you showed up. As soon as there were players nearby, everything turned on right away. The goblins scurried into action and started generating missions for us, trading and discussing. But if we weren't nearby, everything would stay frozen or work in background mode with minimal use of computing resources. That's exactly right. And now imagine this. A squadron of NPC orcs is walking into desolate, unpopulated lands where not a single living player can be found. Those unpeopled regions are probably in a half-asleep state, using as little computing power as possible. Let's not consider you and I, and say that it's just our orcs on the march. You can't seriously think that just because of such a modestly sized group of NPCs, whole regions of Boundless Realm would be activated, and the expensive computing resources of corporation servers would be wasted on their upkeep. I'd never believe it on my life. Most likely, it would just calculate the speed of our squadron, and as a result, the game system would spit out where it would be at a given time. After all, recall after we got that message from Taisha. Your orcs walked in peace to the copper mine near Dotur Kawe, and probably didn't meet anyone along the way. It was as if they were simply walking, not interacting with the game world, and at the calculated time, simply appeared at their destination.
I hadn't considered that before, but she was right. Why simulate the movement of every NPC in the huge Boundless Realm? Also, there wouldn't be enough computing power for that truly titanic effort, even in the most powerful game cluster. Players only care about what is happening next to them, and the system devotes its main resources to showing its users a vibrant and interesting Boundless Realm. In fact, a simple squadron of NPCs without living players had much higher chances of reaching a certain map point without coming across any difficulties. That had to be thought through.
Our conversation was interrupted by the flapping of huge wings over my head. Vixen had returned from her nightly hunt. My winged snake brought a half-suffocated desert jerboa, and I thanked the fortunate hunter for taking care of her hungry master. I extended a hand to stroke my emerald beauty as usual, but the royal forest wyvern unexpectedly pulled back from my affections and stuck her toothy maw and long neck toward me. I got confused and didn't realize at first what my flying mount might want, but after that, I realized my winged scout wanted to share some information. I took a step closer and leaned the forehead of my big-eared goblin against Vixen's head. Just then, a kaleidoscope of pictures ran before my eyes like screenshots of the game taken from up high. A hill next to the orc camp, densely crowded with so many different monsters there wasn't even room for a falling apple to hit the ground. Most of all, it was large toothy rodents, rats, jerboas, hamsters, very, very many rodents. Although there were also plenty of wolves, there were also a decent amount of reanimated animal skeletons, partially decayed zombies and a few tall leshies armed with blowguns. That was unpleasant information. I was working under the impression that the enemy wouldn't have any ranged weaponry. And above this motley crew, there was a whole swarm of large winged insects and a few ghosts. Our defensive bulwark could certainly not hold back these creatures. The flying beasts could attack my army from any direction, and further over the hill, it got much more interesting. Saddled on a very large reddish-brown swamp wolf, there was a huge two-headed monster that looked like two overgrown rat bodies fused together. But one head of the strange Siamese twins was dead and without eyes, having long ago turned into bones stretched over with dried-out skin. It wasn't clear how it was still moving and flapping its lipless gums. But at that, the second rat head was totally alive and darting its evil red eyes at Vixen flying in the sky. The monster was equipped with a heavy black cuirass with two head holes. One paw was holding the reins and the other had a glimmering staff, clearly filled to the brim with strong magic. Hyenarius, Rat King, Lord of the Swamps of the Styx. I had apparently discovered the black magic being that united this ghastly army of the living and the dead. Blood-soaked Swamp. I told Valeriana about the Rat King and described him in detail. The forest Mavka considered it for a minute, then suggested a few options of how to try and reach the enemy leader. But she tore apart all her own ideas in short order, because we wouldn't manage to reach the hostile military leader either in stealth, on the Grey Pack, or on Vixen. And we certainly couldn't kill him in any kind of reasonable time frame. The king was guarded by a whole army of dangerous high-level creatures, including flying ones, which made the mission of taking him down extremely complicated. The forest nymph adjusted her hair, messed up by the cold bursts of wind coming from the river and our camp, and took a heavy sigh.
Let's hope that, right before the attack or during the battle, the Rat King will come to within striking distance of our arrows or spells. Then we can try to get rid of him. I can just feel that, with the death of the leader, this whole army will fall apart all on its own.
I also thought so. In all of Boundless Realm, the undead could not coexist with the living, and the only possible reason for this exception was the half-dead, half-alive Rat King. From the direction of the orc camp, the wind carried an intoxicating scent I wasn't expecting. Donuts, frying in hot oil. It seemed that Tondik Exuberant had finally gotten to his chef duties. The Mavka also picked up the smell and asked to explain about the fat chef. I told her about Tondik and his doting mother, and also about what I'd bought in her alchemy shop. At the same time, I complained that I hadn't found anything interesting from the weaponsmiths or armorers in Dotur Kawe. I mean, of course, I managed to get a new blowgun, cloak, mail, boots, and leather pants that were much better than my old stuff, which was for a level 15 or minus 20 character. But everything I bought, if it had any magical bonuses at all, was just average and boring. The forest Mavka heard out my groaning and laughed happily in reply.
Big ears, did you think you'd find sets or unique or legendary items in a normal trade shop? The whole reason such items are valued is that they are found very rarely. What's that?
The Mavka asked, seeing me do something unexpected. My flap-eared goblin squatted down and was digging in the thick grass,
gathering some large yellow berries. Herbalism skill increased to level 16. Miraculous Cloudberry, alchemy ingredient. Herbalism skill increased to level 17. Fame increased. Present value, 8. You are the first to discover this plant in Boundless Realm.
2 skill increases in a row? I could understand the first. I had not received any increases in herbalism for a long time, even though I was stubbornly gathering plants all the time, if I happened to come across them. But what was the second for? For discovering a new type of plant? Apparently. I told my sister about my discovery and the double growth in skill, at the same time showing her the unusually large berries. Domovka then immediately asked that I give her one, so she could determine the properties of the new plant, because Amra didn't have enough intelligence to do so.
It gives a decent boost to regeneration, but for quite a short time, the forest nymph shared her conclusions. Tim, I've got a feeling that if you made a concentrated elixir of these berries, it might give complete regeneration like trolls have, and even restore lost limbs. But that's just a feeling. You should check it. By the way, here's a good way to quickly level herbalism. After all, we're going to wild and unknown lands where very few herbalists have been before, if any. I suspect that you will come across a good number of new plants. I think if you manage to raise the skill fast enough, your director will be satisfied.
Our conversation was interrupted by the piercing wail of a signal horn. One of the sentries watching the enemy army had seen them go into action.
It seems to have started.
The forest nymph made a few passes with her hands to renew her defensive spells.
Best of luck to us all, and don't forget to eat that jerboa before battle,
my sister said, pointing at the barely living creature that was still in Vixen's mouth, after which she headed out to her defensive sector.
I won't,
I promised the Mavka, looking around for prying eyes. The swamp jerboa died from just one vampire bite. I shared its body with the ever-hungry Vixen.
Experience received. 1,105 experience. Achievement unlocked. Taste tester. 88 of 1,000. Racial ability improved. Taste for blood. Gives plus 1% to all damage dealt for each unique creature killed with vampire bite. Current bonus, plus 26%.
Not bad, not bad. The hunger passed, and my thirst for blood was also totally sated, so I didn't need to worry about that for the next 30 hours. After wiping the traces of blood off my face, as not to betray my secret, I hurried to the most dangerous and important defensive sector and immediately jumped onto Fimblethul's back while running, so my short, flap-eared goblin could see at least something in the distance. It seemed the alarm had been raised by Johnny, the eagle-eyed sentry boy who had come from the tipsy albatross to my pirate crew on the White Shark, then followed the orcs into the desert.
Captain Amra, the enemies have come down from the hill into that ravine!
Johnny pointed into the darkness.
You can't see them from here because of those thick bushes, but when it was light out, we walked through there. The ravine leads along the river right to our camp.
Holy Moses! The Rat King had shown a bit of tactical trickery, trying to get his army into our camp unnoticed. What could I say? The defensive trench had been dug, sharpened stakes were placed, the barricade was reinforced, and my orcs were already equipped with new weapons and armor. The enemies would be forced to approach our fortification through the sections we'd left open, only 3 or 4 monsters per passage at a time, and meanwhile, my crossbowmen would be constantly zinging enemies with bolts. The rest of the monsters would simply not fit and just trip each other up, pressing into their allies' backs. We were ready. I thanked Johnny for his good vision and attentiveness, then sent the young chap to the rear. The front lines were no place for a child, even if he was a level 35 sentry. I also didn't want to lose the only human in my orcish and goblin army. The boy tried to object, but I was insistent and even thought up an explanation.
Chef Tondik is cooking donuts back there. Take Eric and Yuna and start handing out food to the hungry soldiers, and you can eat too. But if I see any of you at the barricades, I'll tear your ears off.
Foreman skill increased to level 37.
But then I was quickly left speechless. Behind the nearest bush-covered hill, I could see enemies just 200 meters away. What surprised me was that the enemy army was moving in silence, trying not to reveal their approach too early. My crossbowmen fired a volley on Valeriana's command, and I saw a few monsters fall and roll on the ground, immediately trampled by the innumerable paws of their attackers.
Only in our direct zone of sight, after being entirely convinced that they were revealed, did the enemies break their strange and utterly unnatural silence and start giving off a ghastly howl with hundreds of different voices. An enemy arrow passed just 1 centimeter from my head. I noticed it at the very last moment and dodged by some miracle. Dodge skill increased to level 23.
"All bowmen, first fire on the leshies! They can hit us from afar!" I shouted out,
not wasting any time, and activating the Grey Pack control interface. I made sure that, above all else, the wolves, wargs, and mythical hound had the Pack Hunter perk, increasing attack numbers, resistance, and armor by 10% for each member of the Grey Pack with the same perk active. After that, I changed Fimblethul's second perk, available for all pets level 50 and higher, to Bloodthirsty, which made his health go up for every bite he landed. And finally, I looked at the list of beasts I could include in the Grey Pack. There were lots of options. The Rat King's army had no less than 40 swamp wolves of all different levels. I could take any 3 of them into the Grey Pack just by dragging them into the slot. I chose the 3 highest level wolves and immediately gave them the Pack Hunter and Bloodthirsty perks, then set them against a group of leshy archers. Animal control skill increased to level 27. My 3 new swamp wolves didn't survive for more than 6 seconds, swept away by a wave of enemies piling on them. The wolves didn't get close to any of the enemy archers, or even get out of their tightly packed groups. The resulting scuffle did delay the wave of attackers by a few seconds, though, allowing my crossbowmen to get off another volley. After tossing the gray, inactive wolves out of the Grey Pack, I chose new swamp wolves. This time, I didn't even choose perks, immediately ordering the predators to run away from the enemy armies, setting a faraway point on the map. The result was similar. A great many teeth and claws tore the 3 wolves to pieces in a matter of seconds. Without the Pack Hunter perk, they had no chance. Their armor and health were just too low. Damn. And although I could seriously weaken the enemy army this way, taking all wolves from them one by one, I was still hoping to find a better application for these predators than simply offering them up to the horde of rodents and undead. My 3rd attempt was also not too successful. I tried to give the wolves the Pack Hunter perk and also increase their defense with the Dense Fur perk, after which I set them on the nearest jerboas. There was a scuffle and a bit of chaos. The attacking monsters were distracted by the sudden appearance of enemies in their midst. I managed to stop the approaching wave of monsters very briefly, although this time they were just 100 steps from our positions. The horde of monsters were stuck through with orcish crossbow bolts, taking a bloody harvest. Valeriana Quickfoot once again applied her focus, creating 1 double, then again, and 4 identical forest nymphs opened fire on the enemy with the speed of a machine gun, sending an unending stream of icicles, lightning bolts, and fireballs at the beasts. Level 46. From time to time, an orc would light up with various colors. The warriors were leveling up quickly. For now, my calculation was fully justified. The enemies were high level, and the reward for killing them was quite generous. The 4th attempt to take swamp wolves under my control was more successful. With the Swift Feet perk, 2 of the 3 predators managed to escape the dense crowd and threw themselves at the leshy blowgunners. I immediately added the Pack Hunter perk to these 2 wolves in order to increase their combat stats, and that calculation fully justified itself. These 2 creatures' lives came at a high cost, eliminating 3 of the leshies and pulling a significant cohort of the enemy army away to chase them. Animal control skill increased to level 28. The next 3 swamp wolves joined the Grey Pack, immediately throwing themselves at their neighbors and causing a general brouhaha. In theory, the decision to simultaneously change out my level 45 forest wolves for stronger swamp wolves at 80 to 100 seemed tempting. It would have been a totally logical move to strengthen my ranks, but I refused to do it. Akella, Lobo, White Fang, and Blanca had been with me practically from the very first day in the game, and tossing them aside felt like treason against my loyal pets. Yes, these 4 forest wolves were just NPC creatures, banal pieces of program code, but they had earned their own names, and although it was just that, they were now different from other wolves. The enemies were now close enough that I could shoot them from my blowgun, but I didn't, because it wasn't the most effective use of my time. Instead, I launched a frost breath ice bomb at the approaching wave of enemies. The effect was beyond expectation.
Two dozen enemies turned to ice statues, frozen in monstrous poses, which allowed my crossbowmen and Valeriana to shoot the motionless, vulnerable targets with ease, once and for all crossing half of them off the list of dangerous enemies.
Level 47.
Yikes! Just a flood of experience. Too bad I only had one ice bomb. Valeriana Quickfoot quickly drew the necessary conclusions, though, and all four copies of the Forest Nymph started emphasizing ice and freezing spells. However, my sister soon lost interest in the enemies on the ground. Ghosts and huge winged insects had begun to target the caster determinedly from the air. Her pack of fierce hornets met the enemy, and the quick-winged vixen raced back and forth, spraying the beasts with acid and poison. Quite a serious air battle was taking shape in the night sky. Half of the crossbow orcs turned to air defense, and orcs with shields were covering my sister, but the enemy was fast and deadly. I noticed one of the mirror copies of the Forest Nymph get dashed to pieces with a ringing echo, struck down by a ghastly shadow nosediving from the night sky. Bad news. My sister had once said that she needed a whole hour between casting the doubling spell, so the Magess would not be able to replace that copy anytime soon. The firepower of our very strongest damager had dropped, although it was still hard to say by how much exactly. From what I could see, the majority of my sister's hornets were still alive and doing most of the Beastmaster's damage. Soon, I lost interest in observing the Mavka. The first enemies had reached the central passage. A level 82 flaming skeleton with an old serrated cutlass, a level 80 fetid zombie, and a level 89 royal cobra. Right from Fimblethul's back, I tossed my throwing net on the zombie, trying to hold down the dangerous undead, which was giving off a nasty-smelling poisonous gas. I wasn't worried I'd be poisoned. No matter how you sliced it, Amara's resistance to poison was very high. But my wolves could be poisoned, paralyzed, or even killed by these stinking wisps of green air. Not doubting that the throwing net would hit its target, because it was hard to miss the slow-moving zombie, I jumped off the back of my hound toward the flaming skeleton, waving my blowgun in the air and using it as a simple club. Acrobatic skill increased to level 19. Critical hit, 2,880, 1,440 crushing damage from blowgun, times 2. Armor ignored. Exotic weapon skill increased to level 15. Exotic weapon skill increased to level 16. The extremely non-standard application of the blowgun probably used strength rather than agility, but the game system considered it valid. My strike broke the flaming skeleton's head clean off, flying somewhere far into the swamp, fractured its right shoulder, and lowered its health bar by 70% in one go. My enemy stumbled and missed the chance for a counterattack. My second strike left the flaming skeleton nothing but a pair of legs on the ground, the rest of its bones flying in all directions. Experience received, 62,480 experience, level 48. I saw that the fetid zombie was caught in the net and wouldn't be a threat for some time. However, the royal cobra had sunk its poisonous fangs right into the chest of my mythical hound and was starting to coil its huge body around my pet. The icy white hound would have met its end right then and there, but Fimblethul bit the snake back, partially restoring his health. All the other wolves and wargs were hanging off the huge many-meter body of the cobra and tearing into its flesh, quickly lowering its health. But I still understood that they wouldn't manage to kill the venomous beast before it bit the mythical hound again, which was a guaranteed respawn for my pet. The enemy had to be killed quickly and for certain. I knew only one such method.
"Have at ye, beast! I'll show you how to bite!"
Screaming that, my big-eared goblin threw himself at the dangerous snake and bit right into the royal cobra's yielding throat.
Experience received, 11,050 experience. Achievement unlocked, taste tester, 89 of 1,000. Racial ability improved, taste for blood, gives plus 1% to all damage dealt for each unique creature killed with vampire bite. Current bonus, plus 27%.
By doing this, I had revealed my vampiric nature and was expecting a negative reaction from the orcs, wolves, and wargs who'd seen me. But several seconds passed, and nothing bad happened. Either no one had noticed in the heat of battle, or they all considered a goblin biting an enemy totally explicable and natural. Well then, all the better.
Experience received, 3,015 experience.
I didn't have to deal with the zombie. Poked full of crossbow bolts like a pincushion,
the undead creature finally died and collapsed to the earth. But another group was already coming to replace the first bunch of enemies in the narrow passage. A level 90 swamp jerboa, a level 99 plague rat, a level 88 swamp wolf, and a level 81 mutated centipede. Behind them was a dense pack of dozens of other high-level monsters. I tossed a flame rage firebomb deep into the enemy horde to immediately reduce their health and break the nearest group off from the others. Then I pointed the orc crossbowman at the plague rat.
Everyone shoot at that beast, then the jerboa!
The rat, preparing for a jump and crouching down on its back paws, reeled back, but its place in the narrow passage was immediately occupied by a swamp wolf, growling and baring its sharp teeth. I wasn't prepared to kill him. In fact, I was smiling.
Now you will serve me, and not the Rat King!
After choosing that precise swamp wolf from the still long list of other canines, I included it in the gray pack, immediately activating the Pack Hunter and Bloodthirsty perks, and changing its fur from dirty brown to hot pink. Yes, now the wolf looked very stupid, but at the same time, my crossbowmen were sure not to confuse it with an enemy. I chose another two wolves at random and included them in the gray pack, but they died almost instantly. Animal control skill increased to level 29. Foreman skill increased to level 38. A whole bedsheet of messages about experience gain followed. Apparently, some of the wounded victims of my firebomb had been killed by Valeriana or a bowman. Then came a new system message. Level 49. The gray pack, reinforced by their new member, tore up a swamp jerboa double time and latched into a centipede. The predatory insect incautiously turned its mandibles toward Fimblethul, presenting its side to Lobo and Blanca. But I made the final bite. When else would I manage to find such a rare insect for my vampiric collection? Experience received, 9,050 experience. Achievement unlocked. Taste tester, 90 of 1,000. Racial ability improved. Taste for blood. Gives plus 1% to all damage dealt for each unique creature killed with vampire bite. Current bonus, plus 28%.
Ah! Hot diggity! Another jerboa appeared nearby, which the gray pack tore up on their own, along with a level 80 night shadow that came down to earth.
The vigor of battle overflowing from me, I howled out just like a wolf, and the gray pack was inspired by my canticle of strength and confidence. The enemies around, both undead and living, all recoiled at once, not wanting to meet forces with such fearless enemies. But the situation didn't come together quite so pleasantly on all defensive sectors. I noticed that the forest nymph had only 4 insects left from her whole swarm of hornets, and that the magess herself only had 2 mirror copies now. But worst of all was the right flank. I couldn't see Max Sochnihe at all. The ogre fortifier had lost his huge mount, the moose Lil Timbo, and was struggling desperately with his bloodied club against the many enemies all around him.
"Reserves to the right flank!"
I shouted out at full volume, but my sister immediately answered with a private message.
"The right flank will make it, but the left one is a total mess, and our healer is all the way out of mana. I already gave him half my elixirs of magic."
My goblin's short height prevented me from seeing what was happening on the left flank, so I climbed back up on Fimblethul.
Yikes, shit.
Our defenses there were broken through. The flow of creatures was practically unobstructed through the passage, now abandoned by its defenders. Overcoming the noise of the battle, I heard a frightened wail from the chef, then an echoing blow, as if someone had struck a gong. I turned the mythical hound to the left, preparing to attack the enemy army, but got another message from Valeriana.
"No, don't go left. The troll has already opened a breach with the reserve division. Ziabash and the rest of his division has also regrouped, and me and the other ranged fighters are helping out over there. Better look at the hill to the northwest. Here is our chance to win the battle."
I turned to where my sister had indicated. On a small hill overgrown with thick brush 300 meters from my camp, the two-headed king was saddled on the huge brown swamp wolf Alpha. The living head of Hyenarius shrieked and sprayed saliva. The eye sockets of the dead rat's head lit up a shade of blood red, and the magic wand in the hands of the strange Siamese twins lit up with purple sparks. The path to the king was practically free, disregarding a few wounded survivors writhing on the ground. The enemy army was divided into 2 streams, attacking the right and left flanks of my defenses while totally ignoring the center.
Even the totally brainless zombies had already stopped trying to force their way into my central passage. But in that, I had no faith in the high intellect of the undead. I thought the Rat King must have been commanding the army, sending the attackers to weaker sections in the defense. Anyhow, without skipping a beat, I activated the whole gray pack at once and ordered them to run toward the enemy leader at full speed and avoid any random squabbles along the way. I selected the first swamp wolf in the list for one of the two free slots in the pack, but I decided to leave the 10th and last one open for now. I'd taken quite a liking to the Rat King's shaggy mount. If his master were a living player, I doubt that it would be possible to attach him to my pack. The time with Fimblethul was an exception, made possible by many uniquely convenient circumstances. But an NPC character, even a two-headed half-dead one, could not have pets by definition, so the huge swamp wolf was an independent gaming unit, and could potentially be drawn to my side. And although I hadn't yet seen it in the list of canines I could add to the gray pack, that may have only been because of the large distance between us.
Giddy up!
I spurred the hound on with my feet. Fimblethul burst from place and shot forward like an arrow, not lagging even a step behind the fleet-footed wargs. Athletic skill increased to level 17. Riding skill increased to level 20. You may now choose your first specialization in this skill. Quite a positive message, but also very bad timing. I swiped the text off the screen so it wouldn't hamper my vision, and concentrated on the dangerous enemy. He had already seen me coming. Hyenarius turned toward me with both of his heads and raised his magic wand. Shit! A purple lightning bolt stretched toward my chest from almost half the distance between us, bursting on my mail with brightly colored, unpleasant, sticky droplets. Damage taken. 2,285 hit points. 2,285 from death magic spell, touch of death. Damage taken. 0 hit points. 0 damage from spell, cold of space, immunity to cold. A hard hitter. I felt like I'd been slammed in the stomach with a sledgehammer. My goblin nearly flew off his mount. From just one lone strike, Amra was left with just 30% of his health, so I had to immediately take some healing elixirs. The very idea of attacking such a dangerous enemy started to look foolhardy and unsound, so I even started thinking I should retreat before the Rat King could get off another shot. It seemed the enemy leader didn't even believe that one magic lightning bolt hadn't struck down such a weak, low-level enemy. The living head of the rat reflected surprise, but the ghastly mutant didn't shoot a second time, perhaps due to the spell recovery time or needing to recharge the wand. Instead, the Rat King sicked his shaggy mount on me. That was the wrong move. The predatory beast started running in my direction, letting out that very same icy howl that had scared my orc army. Then the amulet of Fenrir kicked in and listed the swamp wolf Alpha. I saw him appear on the list of potential Grey Pack members and didn't miss my chance. Got him. My new pet immediately got a running speed bonus and a direct order from his master to go full speed toward the Black River and throw himself from the hill into the cold water, sending his ghastly rider into a whirlpool below. The Styx was close at hand, less than 50 meters away, so the Rat King simply didn't have time to react to his mount's change in behavior. Animal control skill increased to level 30. Foreman skill increased to level 39. I saw a beautiful and long jump from the powerful creature, and a second later, the swamp wolf Alpha and his rider were swallowed up by the black waves. The situation in the battle changed immediately. From the top of the hill, I could see perfectly as the once united army broke ranks and started a disorderly retreat, fighting amongst themselves. The surviving camp defenders, not yet believing in their victory, didn't follow the enemy and just reinforce their positions, linking their shields tighter and holding their spears out in front. I spent a long time standing at the very banks of the Styx, staring into the dark surface of the river. The swamp wolf Alpha's life bar had long gone gray. The creature had drowned and been sent for respawn. Neither night vision nor search for life could help me find Hyenarius, but his heavy metal cuirass didn't allow him to swim to the surface. Nevertheless, 3 lingeringly long minutes passed before a sharp rise in experience confirmed the death of the Rat King. Level 50. Attention, you have reached level 50. You may now improve your character's survival by choosing a modification. I sent my sister the approximate coordinates of the Rat King's death. That beast could easily have had interesting loot, so it would be a good idea to dive in the river in search of trophies. Almost instantly, Valeriana Quickfoot answered that she'd understood the mission and would send Max Sochnier down to have a look. So, the Naiad traitor had survived after all. This was very good news. As was the message that came from my sister after that, saying that the healer is no longer an issue. I didn't know what exactly had happened to Antonius Just, but I intended to find out after returning to the camp. For now, I needed to distribute my built-up stat points, improvements, and perks. Strength and constitution were increased automatically with each level, and I placed the other free points according to my habitual scheme, 1/3 in agility, 2/3 in charisma. It was also totally simple to handle the modifications. As I had initially decided to make my goblin vampire less conspicuous, I needed to keep going on this path, especially given that every time, the bonus from the modification was more and more significant. The first time, at level 20, it gave just -1% to discovery radius. Then, at level 30, -2%. At 40, it gave -3, and now it was down to -4. To be honest, I didn't fully understand from the description exactly how the effect of a few levels of modifications stacked with a -20% perk to discovery radius from stealth, but in any case, Amra would now be harder to see, which meant he had a better chance of surviving when meeting with dangerous enemies. It was just as simple to choose the riding skill specialization. Given how my Royal Forest Wyvern was potentially the second fastest flying creature in Boundless Realm after the mythical Phoenix, I needed to purposely choose specializations to emphasize this advantage. Plus 15% to movement speed was more than decent. Also, the Gray Pack acquired the very same ability and became stronger. Much more interesting was that, at level 50, my big-eared goblin got another primary and secondary skill slot. But the next such expansion was only possible at the ephemerally far-off level 100, so I needed to think very carefully about what skills Amra should gain now in order to reach that coveted level as quickly as possible. Also, to just get to it at all. After the battle, I started unhurriedly back to the orc camp, finishing off wounded and crippled enemies who hadn't managed to retreat with the scattered army. Legless skeletons crawling who knows where, headless zombies chaotically wandering about the swamps, a gigantic praying mantis and royal cobra locked in a battle to the death. I killed the praying mantis myself with a vampire bite, because I didn't have anything like it in my collection yet, while I let the Gray Pack rip the wounded cobra to shreds. Achievement unlocked. Taste tester. 91 of 1,000. Racial ability improved. Taste for blood. Gives +1% to all damage dealt for each unique creature killed with vampire bite. Current bonus, +29%. Akella, the first and most leveled of my hardened forest wolves, had already reached level 49. Lobo, Blanca, and White Fang were still languishing at around 48. In any case, either today or tomorrow, they would all most likely get a second perk, which would give me significant leeway to vary their abilities, depending on the situation. Darius and Darina, level 49 wargs, were dawdling in the squelching thick muck behind me, and Darius was panting noticeably. He had been seriously wounded in tonight's battle. The phlegmatic level 62 mythical hound Fimblethul was interested only in grub as usual, and he was vacuuming up any traces of food he found on the ground, not having an aversion even to the bones and flesh of the undead. But my two new swamp wolves felt timid in the unfamiliar pack, and were anxiously pressed up against my legs, seeking protection from their master. It looked quite funny and even awkward with their levels at 88 and 89. The pink wolf was especially shivering and putting his tail between his legs, as if he was also embarrassed at his stupid appearance. I had yet to decide what to do with these two, because I was hoping to find more interesting and stronger pets higher up the River of Death, and I would need empty slots in the Gray Pack for them to occupy. But for now, I kept the Swamp Wolves in, because it would be stupid to part with the strongest and most dangerous of my pets, except, of course, the Swamp Wolf Alpha, which hadn't respawned yet. I wasn't sure of its level, but it was certainly higher than that of my other pets. Oh, plant! My big-eared goblin herbalist nearly stepped on a black, practically invisible flower in the dark swamp. Only the stench of death exuding from it warned me, and I stopped literally one step away.
Nocturnal corpse flower. Herbalism skill increased to level 18. Fame increased. Present value, 9. You are the first to discover this plant in Boundless Realm.
Great! Another increase in fame for discovering a new plant. Most likely, these swampy shores were covered with a good deal of flowers, which opened their petals only at night, and could only be seen then. Few players had come through these parts even in the daytime, and there probably were even less herbalists. So, at night, I was probably the first herbalist to ever walk these ghastly swamps in the dark. I had to test that theory, because every new plant gave me a generous +1 to herbalism and +1 to fame. After gathering the black, unpleasant-smelling blossoms for future study of their alchemical properties in a calmer setting, I told the Mavka about my discovery and herbalism growth in a private message, and also warned my sister that I would be walking around the camp for a bit, telling her not to worry about my absence. My sister immediately answered that she understood, and would send the orcs to loot corpses and gather pelts and meat before the bodies of the dead animals disappeared. I walked an unhurried circle around the nearest hills, gathering rare herbs, berries, and mushrooms. I still didn't risk getting too far from the defended camp, because there were plenty of dangerous beasts wandering around, but I could allow myself a half hour or two to level herbalism, and although, in the end, my skill managed to raise up to level 19, I didn't find anything more, just plants already known to other players. That didn't upset me one bit, though. After all, this was just the start of my journey, and higher up the sticks, I could expect to find even wilder, undiscovered places. There was one more reason I was in no rush back to the orc camp. I was afraid. Yes. Yes, precisely. After clearly demonstrating my vampiric abilities during the battle, I was worried about the upcoming conversation with my warriors. A decent amount of orc defenders had seen me bite the cobra during the battle, both the crossbowmen and spearmen with large shields blocking off the path behind the greatback. It would have been naive to hope that none of the dozens of orcs had seen the vampire bite. So, my secret was most likely already revealed, and the orcs would probably fear and hate me. But I couldn't put the difficult conversation off forever. Sooner or later, I'd have to talk about it with my crew. I was 50 steps from the fortifications when a huge, muddy brown beast appeared next to me. The swamp wolf Alpha had respawned. Only now could I appreciate his truly fearsome dimensions and familiarize myself with his impressive combat statistics. Level 110 Swamp Wolf Alpha. High attack strength, armor, hit points, and wonderful endurance. My new pet had practically tripled the stats of Akella and the other forest wolves. The beast held himself proudly and confidently, looking at the various predators surrounding him with superiority and even obvious contempt. The Alpha didn't dispute my power and treated his master with great respect, but emphasized with all his behavior that Amra was the only one he would obey. I immediately decided to keep this brown wolf and tried thinking of a nickname that was appropriate to his character. For some reason, the name Baron came to mind. I felt it represented strength, independence, and power. I immediately renamed my new pet. It was as if Baron could see the name changing over him, and gave me a dog-like lick on the face with his scratchy tongue. Then he gave the same ghastly howl that had scared my orcs. I turned an old leather belt into a collar for the huge beast, because I wasn't sure I could keep the wild and dangerous creature in the camp otherwise. Animal control skill increased to level 31. Foreman skill increased to level 40. And so, holding the huge wolf by the collar, as he bared his teeth spitefully and lunged at everyone he saw, I walked into the camp. The orcs bowed their heads in respect and made way for me. I then saw my first mate, Ziabash Hardy, at the fire and went over to him. The orc had always listened to the opinion of the rest of the crew, knew the mood of the group, and could speak for all his compatriots, so he was just the person to discuss my vampirism with. When he saw me approach, Ziabash Hardy lowered his head dejectedly.
"Captain, I wasn't able to do my part and hold my flank. There were so many beasts pushing on our shield wall. Something inside the defenders broke. Everyone just forgot about resistance and wanted only to survive. Flinging up our heels, we scampered to the very center of the camp. And I ran as well, damn near first of the bunch. And if the monsters hadn't gotten distracted by the smell of food from the kitchen.
My heart stopped at these words. A wave of monsters had reached the center of the camp and attacked the kitchen? But that was where Tondik Exuberant and Numb Spiteful were with Eric and Yuna. What had happened to them? Fortunately, his very next words reassured me a great deal.
If it weren't for the bravery of the fat chef, who held off the boldest attacking rats with his two-handed pan, the consequences could have been most dire. But Numb Spiteful got them with his terrifying hammer, and a few orcs from the barricades came to help, as well as your goblin niece and nephew. Then the troll Vash led his 50 berserkers into battle, and the crossbowmen and Mavka shot them all down. My soldiers and I were ashamed and joined the main formation. All in all, we managed somehow. Eventually, the enemies suddenly stopped coming forward, then just ran for the hills. We didn't understand what happened at first, but then the Mavka explained that it was you, our captain, killing the Rat King. Overall, that's what happened. Captain, it's for you to decide what to do with me and my cowardly soldiers. I will accept any sentence.
What were our losses? I asked the most important question, and Ziavash Hardy said with sorrow in his voice.
18 orcs were lost, of which 11 were under my command. The goblin boy Eric was also killed, but he's already been reborn. I just saw him alive and well. And the human healer died somehow. To be honest, I didn't see. But he's one of the undying, so he will probably be reborn as well. There are 40 wounded and crippled. I ordered them brought into the big tent. Shaman Gu, Yuna, and the Mavka are attending to them now. And also, Tondik Exuberant and Numb Spiteful suffered badly, but they're lying in a separate tent. And I also heard that 7 people from the Tipsy Albatross were laid out on the right flank.
What? I couldn't believe my ears. What were they even doing there?
Well, there was the Naiad, Max Sochnier, captain of the galley. He first sent Johnny to the ship for aid, then ran off because his people didn't believe the young scout. Help arrived just in time, and the monsters weren't able to break the right flank. Not like my left.
It hadn't all turned out as bad as I might have expected, given the initial balance of forces. If not for one, but... Lowering my voice to a whisper, I asked my first mate,
"Who in our crew knows about my vampirism? And how did the orcish soldiers react to the news?"
Successful check for Ziavash Hardy's opinion. Successful check for Vosh's opinion. Successful check for Numb Spiteful's opinion. Successful check for Gugel All-Knowing's opinion. Successful check for Johnny's opinion. Successful check for Orc Race opinion. All conditions met, 6 of 6. Hidden mission completed. Our captain's eccentricities. Racial. Rare. Reward. 24,000 experience. Plus 30 to any check of your crew's opinion. Veil skill increased to level 15. Veil skill increased to level 16. Stealth skill increased to level 24. Foreman skill increased to level 41. Foreman skill increased to level 42. Ziavash Hardy's eyebrows shot up in surprise.
Captain Hamra, when even was that? Talk started of a vampire on board the White Shark when you first traded wine for blood. Or was it even earlier? I can't remember anymore. First of all, everyone was on guard, of course. There was a lot of chatter. How can you not gossip about something like that? But they eventually got used to it. The crew never thought too badly of you for it. In fact, it was the opposite. They saw that our captain is courageous and favored by fortune, so if he has some weird habits, that's his business. And when Taisha asked us to build a tent in the sunny desert for Captain Hamra, everyone understood why. Also, the winged snake is constantly bringing still-living beasts for the captain, and he doesn't eat them, just kills them. All in all, our crew has long known about our captain's vampirism, but none of our soldiers will give up your secret, you can be sure.
Whoa! The whole pirate crew had long known about their captain's predilection for blood, but all that time they had reacted fairly calmly. My goblin stroked his huge ears in contemplation. Ugh, if I'd have known earlier that I didn't have to shiver over my secret, think how many nerves I could have saved. My mood was plain.